Welcome to Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Author and attorney Roberta Grimes will explore and illustrate how she, after an extraordinary experience of light in childhood, has discovered channels of communication to the afterlife and how these implications have an effect on our everyday lives. Please welcome the host of Seek Reality, Roberta Grimes.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and we're coming to you live on the BBM Global Network and TuneIn Radio. It is part of the basic human design for all of us to be at least somewhat psychic. Our minds are inextricably part of the one eternal mind that is all that exists, and that includes both the minds of those now in bodies and the much greater number of eternal minds that are not now in bodies. So, in theory, it should be easy for us to be connected by mind with anyone at all, and whether that person is alive or dead. We're born psychic, but nearly all of us learn early in childhood to ignore whatever we perceive of the reality that lies beyond the reach of our physical senses. So those few among us who go on to develop their natural psychic gifts are treasures. My wonderful, blessed friend, Wendy Zammit, who is, I should say, co-author with her husband, Victor, of the Friday Afterlife Report. Wendy calls her fellow Australian, Louise Herman, one of the most talented and dedicated mediums on Earth. Let me just say, incidentally, if you don't yet get the Zammit's Friday Afterlife Report that features the latest news, the best evidence in this field, please give yourself a gift. Start receiving it today. Go to victorzammit.com and subscribe. The Zammit's Friday letter is free, and it's the best news you're going to read all week, especially nowadays. But Wendy was the one who pointed me toward Louise Herman's amazing work. And Louise understands, apparently, that her dedication, which is, I think, extreme, Louise, her dedication to this work is rare. She called her 2010 book Dedicated to the Afterlife. In 2013, Louise was voted by her peers in the Australian Psychics Association as the Australian Psychic of the Year. It turns out, I was surprised to learn that she works full-time as a computer engineer. Talk about someone who's both right and left-brained. But in her spare time, she's conducted more than 600 public mediumship demonstrations, and she joins us today all the way from Sydney, Australia. Louise, I'm thrilled that you're here. Welcome to our little family.
Thanks, Roberta. It's great to join you today.
And I should just say for all the Americans in the audience, you're going to love listening to Australians. I think this is like the loveliest voice I've ever heard. Louise, you have a fascinating history. You started out very young, sort of seeing beings, and tell us a little about that.
Okay. When I was about 10 years of age, we moved into a new home, and at the time we stayed in a red double bunk, and there was an old lady that was chatting with me nightly, and I started to realise after a period of time I could see through the double bunk, through the bed that I was sleeping in, and she was see-through and she always wore the same clothes.
Oh,
so of course I went to my mum, and my mum also is a medium and served many years at the Spiritualist Church, so she said, you have to sort this out for yourself. I can't help you. It's your relationship with the spirit world. And it was about 12 months later my brother went missing. And his body wasn't recovered for around, I think, 10 days. And then I had communication with him in between that period. He drowned, and we had communication in the hallway. He would often call me out. And then that was probably one of the most pivotal turning points. And then after that, it just progressed over the years. And then, you know, my early 20s, the spirit world were basically banging on my door and saying, this is the work that's ahead for you.
Wow. Now, when your brother was missing, your mother, you said, is somewhat psychic. Was he talking to her as well?
We spoke about that briefly over the years. But at the time, I do remember there was limited communication. He was in a remote area. So she had her experience. She knew straight away before the police came on the door. But for me personally, I had my own individual experiences, and it was a matter of just waiting for the right time for that recovery to occur. But I remember at the time that I didn't really completely understand. But I do remember at the time Mum most definitely had experiences, and other siblings of mine, they're all quite psychic. So everyone had their own individual experiences as well.
So this is an important point, I think, to make, because we're going to be talking a lot today about developing mediumship talent. And it seems that it runs in families. You say your mother and your siblings also have this gift. Are there others in the family as well, grandparents? Anyone like that?
Well, my grandmother was blind, so she used her extra senses to get her around. That was my father's side. And my mum's father was quite psychic as well. Look, I believe, Roberta, that the spirit world, if you are going to have the path of mediumship, then you're going to be best equipped with the understanding, I believe, at a younger age. If that's to be your path and you are to kick off at a young age, then I believe that the spirit world, and we choose as part of our contract the best possible scenario to get us out there to do the work to maximise that mediumship. I'm not saying that's a prerequisite, but I do truly believe that you need to be the student before the teacher. So I do believe that not only being born into a mediumistic psychic family, but it's not just that. My family background is full of open heart. My father was in the war. He was in a war camp. He had us quite late, in his 40s. So he was put in a place in a war camp in the war, in the Second World War in Germany. So we were brought up with very much basic, you know, looking out for other people, don't waste food, be of service. And I think those factors are critical in terms of the connection to the vibration and the awareness of those around you. And I always say that you need to be aware of the living before you're aware of the deceased. You need to be aware of what's going on around you. So all those factors, I believe, are contributing parts of being an open medium of service.
That is such an extraordinary set of statements. It's hard to even unpack them all. Well, that's a new insight for me, and I think it's a powerful one, that if you were going to come into a lifetime to become a medium, you would choose this kind of family. And you're absolutely right. I mean, there were people open in your family, open to the notion of communicating with spirit. And if there's any kind of bodily predisposition that would be genetic, you would have it since you are. What a great insight that is. You planned this, obviously, and you chose this family for that reason. But the other thing you've said, which to me is so powerful and profound, is that you were raised to be giving, because being a psychic, being a medium, people don't understand, I don't think, what a burden it is on your body and on your mind to be doing this. And I know enough mediums to know that that's really true. If physical mediumship, we're going to be talking about later in the hour, and that is a serious drain on the body. So you were reared by a family that was giving, and now you want to give. And I think that's really powerful, Louise. Thank you for sharing that. You say that when you were sort of around your 20s, you started to get more serious about developing it. What was that like?
Okay, well, I still work for a US global software company. So at the time, I moved into a police house, and I was only supposed to be there for a couple of nights, and I stayed there for quite a few years. So I had my tests with the spirit world around that, and I also had my tests. A lot of tests, I believe, are given from the spirit world. And at that time, I had to go to very senior people in the company and basically put my job on the line with messages from their loved ones from the other side. So I believe there comes a time where the spirit world makes a decision like, this is your path, this is where we're going. And for me, it wasn't questionable to put my material life, my career on the line, to go to very senior people in the company and deliver messages. And I could well have lost my job. Went to the HR manager, human resources manager, went to my boss at the time, really had no idea how this would be taken, and I delivered messages from their loved ones. So that was really the pivotal turning point for me.
Okay,
I was delivering messages because I was...
That amazes me. No, not at all. But I just want to sort of wrap our minds around that. You're working in a serious job, in a serious company, and you're getting messages from loved ones of your bosses, right? That's what was happening.
Yeah,
You're sitting at your desk and they're saying, go tell so-and-so this or that, and you do it?
Well, most of it was of a night time, so the spirit world never intervened with my work. But at the time, I was working across 16 countries. That was my job, working across 16 countries, Europe, the UK, India, so on. So there were some very tragic circumstances, and a young man had come in from India, and his sister was killed in a car accident, and I had to pull him aside, pull everyone else aside, and it just grew. It just went like wildfire. And then after that, I suppose that it was either accept me for who I am. So I did pretty much put my job on the line. I didn't care what people thought. And at the time, I was living in a police house, so I could have been thrown out of that house at any time or locked up. And so information was coming through on that end. And
What is a police house? Because that's something.
It was a house full of police, and they normally wouldn't have civilians, but I moved in there just for a couple of weeks to start with, and then of course there were visits of other people turning up as well, so it was on both ends.
Wow.
So for me, I don't have the traditional path of mediumship, you know, sitting years in a circle, developing, having the beautiful support of a spiritualist church. That just wasn't happening for me at all.
No.
You know, I'm a bit gutsy. I've never cared what people think. And so just one day I just got up in front of a group of people and started to demonstrate. So I was demonstrating before individual readings.
Wow.
The audiences.
And what was the group you were talking with then? You just stood up, you said, and started. Was it a group of people who were interested in mediumship?
Yes. Well, it was a group of it that was in Sydney. And I do thank God for bringing them forward with me. But they could see the potential. I just got up one morning on a Saturday morning and spoke to the group. And loved ones just came flooding through. And that was the beginning. And then I just bought a trailer, put it on the back of the car, and off I went every Friday night, or did it for two nights a week, and travelled around the place and just started out in the back of people's homes, and then we got booted out because too many people were turning up, and then all the Italians and Greeks told other Italians and Greeks, and that was the beginning of it. And then nearly 700 events later, now we're in city halls and town halls, and at the moment,
wow,
I'm up the northern part of Australia. So, yeah, for me, there was no time to think of development. But it's been great. It's been a great path.
Well, absolutely. This is a baptism under fire for sure, if you're suddenly doing it without having any prep. What does it feel like? Are you aware you're about to start hearing from someone? Do you hear a sound? Does it change? Does it feel different in your head when this starts to happen?
Okay, that's a good question. Well, for me, there is no difference. I can't explain it to you. I don't believe in being in tune or off tune. I just believe that you're just present and all of a sudden you have knowledge of truth. That's the best way for me to explain it. So I am very clairaudient. I do hear very clearly. But so I'll give you an example. I'm here in a hotel at a resort. Only a couple of days ago, I was sitting on the beach, received a clear message, just get up, go and get a massage across the road. And I laid down, didn't know why I was there. You get like a calling, a pull is the best way for me to explain that. And I don't do readings off the side everywhere I go. I'm not like that. But if there's a need, there's a need, and that comes first for me with the spirit world. And so I laid down, and then immediately I said, look, I've got a young man here. He's taken his own life. Are you aware of this? And she said, yes, that's my brother. I'm feeling quite low. I don't want to be here anymore. So you get a pull of a need. I believe I believe mediumship revolves around a need. So there's a pull straight away. And then you just get a blend, what I call a blend of energy, where I become him and he becomes me. And then our thoughts interact in each other's minds. And often I'm always settling the spirit person down. They're quite nervous. And a lot of people don't think of this, but Can you imagine your loved ones, Roberta, every day jumping in front of you and you can't see and hear them, the frustration there?
Oh, yes.
So when you first get that blend, when you first really get that blend, there's excitement, I believe, on their end, because once they know you can hear them, that's when we really blend our energy together and just allow it to flow.
So are you hearing their voices in your mind or just their thoughts? What is it you're hearing in your mind when that voice spoke to you, for example?
Okay, well, I call it, it's clairaudience, I do hear it, but the best way that I describe clairaudience or clear hearing, that's the most strongest of my sense, interruption of thought processing.
Okay,
my thoughts become in the background and their thoughts come in the forefront.
One of the things you're venturing into now is physical mediumship. So we'll talk about that a little bit because most people really don't know what it is and they certainly don't know, you know, the details, how you would develop it, why it's so unusual to do it in light and so on. So could you tell us what physical mediumship is first?
Okay, so physical mediumship, we've been setting for 10 years for that. So physical mediumship is where you have a group of sitters that sit with a medium for a period of time. And traditionally, over the last few hundred years, always the medium sat in darkness and sat in a cabinet because a substance that is extracted from the medium's body called ectoplasm is used to produce, for instance, a larynx, so a spirit person can impress their thoughts onto that, and the sitters can hear in the room through their physical senses, through hearing, through seeing the spirit world come to life. So what it is, it's an energetic vibration that slows down enough in a world of matter that we live in so that people can physically experience their loved ones. So even the most skeptical person could hear the voice of their own loved ones present in the room.
What's interesting with that, it seems to me, is that it's a larynx, but people in the afterlife don't have, you know, a larynx or vocal cords, and they communicate by thought, and yet the voice, they can somehow remember how they sounded and make that larynx sound like themselves, right?
Yes, well, that's carried in the vibration, the memory of the vibration itself. So what they're doing is just slowing, bringing their vibration from a higher vibration in their world, and it slows down as it materializes in the larynx. And that's why they'll still have the same voice that they had when they were alive. So we're just slowing that vibration down. And, of course, that's difficult for those on that side because they haven't spoken for a long period of time. So the beginning of it for both sides, not just for the medium and the sitters on this side, but those in the spirit world, it's difficult because some of them haven't spoken for 50 years.
Yes. Yes. Well, I had an amazing experience I'll share just briefly. My primary spirit guide, I learned only less than 2 years ago, had been Thomas Jefferson in his next to last lifetime. And I discovered, and also he and I had had a number of lifetimes together, including I was a minor figure late in his life as Jefferson. And Leslie Flint, I then discovered relatively recently, Thomas had come through him. In the early 60s, and I listened to the recording, and it was one of the most extraordinary experiences of my life because I immediately recognized the voice. I didn't know I had no conscious memory of what Jefferson would have sounded like, but it was exactly a voice that I vividly remembered. And so I know it sounds like the same person, and that would have been 160 odd years or something, well certainly 140 years after he died that he spoke then. So they do seem to be able to remember it for a very long time, and from previous lifetimes as well. Quite amazing system.
Absolutely. And even confirmed for you, Roberta, the day that you contacted me, Wendy called me, and I was testing a software product, and to test that, I downloaded the video on Thomas Jefferson.
Did you really? Bless his heart.
Absolutely. So when Wendy told me that, I was in front of me testing it and had a video that I downloaded to test the software. So I knew that you were guided for other reasons.
Well, it's quite an amazing experience, to say the least. But he's on the same mission you're on, which is to save the world. People ask me when they find out that I have a connection with him if he's trying to fix the United States, which Lord knows, needs fixing. And he doesn't seem to really be focused on the U.S. He's focused on fixing the world, which I guess is what all of us are trying to do now. But let's go back to the physical mediumship. So you have been, you sit with sitters so that you can concentrate your energies. Why would you have a group of people sitting with you?
Okay, so we build up the collective energy within the group. And so that energy builds up over a period of time. So around 10 years ago, I just made the decision. Now everybody's talking about taking physical mediumship into light, but I had made that decision 10 years ago. So I said, look, I don't want to sit in a cabinet. I don't want to sit in darkness. I'm not interested in the phenomena side of things. Of course, we do get a lot of phenomena here and there around me, but I'm not interested in that. I'm beyond all of that. And I decided that we would try and pursue the energy and build the energy up in light so that parents could hear the voice of their own children that had passed over. So that's my primary focus. So
wow.
We sit and we build that collective energy up. Not a lot happens within that group itself. We get a lot of bangs and knocks and clicks and fridges and printers turning on and off and drumming and water flowing in the room. We get all those sounds. Healing, some of the people in the group will get completely knocked out, unconscious, where they'll go through a healing process. So we have the same sitters to build up that collective energy within that group. So it's important that there's harmony. It's important there is service, and it's very important there are no expectations, because when we create expectations, we create disappointments, which means the vibration of the room lowers. So what we have done is just sat in service. We've sat, built the energy up over the years. And to be honest with you, Roberta, I've said this from day one, that I don't care if I'm not the medium or not. I don't care if I spend, I gave them a 25-year contract 10 years ago, and I said, if I'm not the medium and a 15-year-old comes out of England in 25 years from now and takes this energy forward, I'm fine with that.
So yeah, that's beautiful.
10 years on, we're now getting results, yeah.
Good. That's wonderful. And do your guides talk to you about what they expect? Or do they think that this is realistic to have a physical mediumship in light?
Well, I mean, we're getting experiences that we didn't expect to happen. Very few physical mediums are mental mediums. So every Friday night I demonstrate in audiences, as well as sit on Wednesday nights for physical, and I have a healing group and so on. I believe
wow.
This is a new energy. I believe it's a combination of service to all the medallions in trance, in physical and mental mediumship. So, yes, we're actually having experiences outside of that group.
One of the things that we quickly learn when we're trying to save the world, help, is that we have to have this constant attitude of service. And she, I think, demonstrates it even more than most people do. And I'd like to just, how does it feel to be so driven by this need to serve and to give, Louise? How would you express it?
Okay. I believe, this is what I believe anyway, I believe we're all natural creators. I truly believe that. I think we're the happiest in our lives when we're creating, when we're growing. So it's a constant urge to push the boundaries, recreate the reality that's around you as well. So when we're in a service, we just know there's a better way. There's a better way for people to live around us. There's a better way to give awareness so that people that are grieving, that have lost children or family members, that they're okay, they're in a better place. So we know there's a drive within us that things could be better if our awareness of those around us opened up. So I believe that's the drive for service.
But you also said something very important, which is that you're happiest when you're serving. And I think that's because when most people think of service, they think of taking something away from yourself. And what I've learned, what I've learned is the opposite is true. I was never really happy in my life till I started doing this work. And people don't even know happiness who haven't chosen something wonderful to give to the world and then given it with all their hearts. That is the happiest you can be. And it just shines in you. I'm so happy to meet you just to experience it. I think it's I just had to say this. Everyone, this is the time when we all are saving the world together. And it is going to be the happiest you're ever going to be when you find your own place in doing it. But obviously, Louise, to be doing physical mediumship in light and able to demonstrate it is going to end the game, right? Pretty much, because there'll be no way then for anyone to say it's faked. The darkness has been a sort of hedge that the skeptics or debunkers, Victor calls them the closed-minded skeptics. It's been a crutch they could use to pretend it wasn't real, and that won't be possible anymore. So that will be great that day when you do it. Is anyone else trying to develop physical mediumship in light of whom you're aware?
We don't. We sort of keep out of the mainstream of things. Not really. We haven't sort of sat with anybody that's doing that consciously. So we're just going about, and we don't take this out to the public. So we sort of keep it within our own group every Wednesday night. So I'm not consciously aware of anyone. Of course, things run parallel in the universe all the time. There's always someone trying to create something somewhere. But just to add a service to that, not just on the physical mediumship side of things and proof of the afterlife, I believe that when we're in service, Roberta, we're willing to put ourselves out there. We're willing to pioneer. We're willing to put ourselves out there and laugh at ourselves with humour. And I think that's very, very important when we're in service, to not take things too seriously and not to be worrying about our ego to be bruised. And when we laugh at ourselves and have a lot of humour in that, then we're at our happiest. We are absolutely at our happiest. And I believe that the spirit world don't have all the answers. I believe we're co-creators and pioneers with them. So when we're in service, we can't expect to sit in a chair and wait to be bestowed upon with all the answers. And I know over the years I have pushed plenty of things back to the spirit world. They've pushed back with me. I've pushed back to them. And when we're in service, we are pushing boundaries, pioneering things, and co-creating. And I think it's that co-creating process, that combination of both sides of life, or people on this side that I work with, that is the essence of service. It's not just sitting and waiting to be told. It's being proactive and trying to find solutions to problems.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautifully said. Now, one word that you said earlier, which I just want to make sure we follow up on in case someone isn't familiar with this, is ectoplasm. That you are not really producing it yet, but you will be producing it, probably because you're starting to produce a gas. Tell people what ectoplasm is, because many people have no idea.
Okay, so I don't produce traditional ectoplasm because I don't sit in darkness. So all creation comes from darkness. So a baby's in a womb, a seed is in the ground. So ectoplasm is the life force of the medium. It comes from particular organs and blood. It's a plasm, and that's what's used traditionally in traditional times to produce a larynx for voices of spirit to be heard in the room. So I don't produce a traditional ectoplasm. I produce what I would call an energy or a gas of some sort. It's not a traditional energy. So I would probably just call it an energy. It's an energy that builds up around me, and that energy can be manipulated by the spirit world. And physiologically, I've adjusted to that over time. About 2 years ago, I'd feel a little bit nauseous. This happens while I'm conscious as well. And then, of course, over time, you get used to that. So I have no interest in producing traditional ectoplasm that needs to be in the dark. They are coating ectoplasm with photoplasm from plants. I'll be interested in that. I'm open to that, but I'm open to any possibility of any energy. So I don't restrict myself when I go in on Wednesday nights and say, right, it needs to be this substance. I really don't care how you do it. So, you know, there's chemists and spirit doctors on the other side continually looking at different ways. And I think they can come up with an energy that's suitable to the medium's makeup as well and vibration. Anything is possible, really.
Louise, every time you talk, I just want to explain so much, because you encapsulate so much in each one of your statements. What you're really saying is that you've said, I want to do this in light. And so your guides, the team working with you, is making that possible by adjusting what it is your body is producing so that it can do what you need it to do to form the structures or whatever. But it's not ectoplasm reacts to light. That's a problem. And what you're producing doesn't react to light. This is so exciting to hear that you're doing this and it's working.
We don't have anything concrete. We have just the clicks, the bangs, the knocks, the fridge turning on and off. But we do hear, there are people reporting of voices that are being heard in the room. So we're in the earlier stages of it, but we know that it's possible in the future.
Louise is a person with a gift, and her gift is something she is trying to share with the world in every possible way. I never met a more giving person than she is, and it's exciting. And I would like to give her some time now to just simply, if you could just talk to, hundreds and thousands of people, what would you tell them, Louise? What are you trying to help them see?
Okay. I was on a call last night with a friend not going through a good time at the moment, and I basically said to her, look, you are ahead of the race. You have awareness. A lot of people leave the earth plane and die with regret. I would be lying to say if I didn't say that was the truth. A lot of people don't think of the afterlife until they're there. So myself as a medium, I'm just the fine small print on the insurance policy that only ever gets read when something goes wrong.
And I love it.
A lot of people get to the other side and they regret that. I should have known. I shouldn't have ran around after material things, focusing on material. And I know from almost 700 audience demonstrations, I'm hearing the same story from those that come through. And that is, I wish I would have known. I wish I would have been of service while I was on the earth plane. I wish I would have had the awareness. Everybody, I believe, is here simply to evolve, simply to grow. And it would be a waste of a lifetime to return to the spirit world and have none of that awareness at all in your lifetime. I think it's robbery, really. And so the earth plane is in its state now because everybody's walking around with that lack of awareness. And I think that too much ownership is put onto the spirit world to resolve everything. Everything that's going on here on the earth plane is a result of the collective minds of everybody that's sitting here. And we can only have change if we are the change, if we are the ones that make the change. Now, lots of people contact me to do workshops, to be more psychic, to be a medium. And so most of my workshops are none of that, and people are very surprised at that. All of my workshops, except one, are get spirited, ignite your wisdom, revive your soul, because I believe once you're connected to your spirit, you are connected. You have access to everything that you need to know. And so the earth plane can only shift if we are aware that we are spirit first and foremost before being a physical person. And so often people only get that realization on death. And what use is that once you're on the other side trying to come back and communicate when most of the people can't hear that truth anyway? So there are two parts to this. Once we have the evidence of the afterlife and the afterlife returning and saying, okay, this is the intelligence, this is what we've learnt, this is how it is when you come to the other side, that once you realise you are spirit, then things change a lot in your life. Your vibration, your awareness, and all happiness, I believe, is directly correlated to your connection to your own spirit. And that is directly correlated to service. So we're not expecting you to be a healer, expecting you to be a psychic or whatever it is. It can be that you walk down the street, you ask someone, how are you, genuinely? Buy somebody your coffee, connect with other people. And I think that as we move further into connecting through technology and IT, we're the most connected through technology, but we're the most disconnected we've ever seen. And people don't stop and communicate with other people that are around them. There's a complete lack of awareness throughout the world. And that can only change if people get off their phones and look about them and help the old woman that's trying to get off the train. So it's a service. It's being aware of other people. And we are our happiest when we're creating, co-creating, and connecting. We are our happiest when we're connecting. Nature doesn't work any other way. Nature only works through a whole connective system. And when man disconnects that and deteriorates one section of that, the whole ecosystem falls apart. So the earth plane is the way it is because of us, those that reside on the earth plane, not those that are in the spirit world. So we can't expect the spirit world to give us the answers for everything. We are the ones that reside here every day. We are the ones that know how the earth plane operates materially. We just need to all make the right choices through free will to shift and change it. And I think we've got enough awareness to do that, but it involves having a cost, and that cost could be material things need to be taken away, or a certain technology needs to be wound down. I'm sure if we said no technology on a Sunday, we would survive and have people out there connecting.
Wow.
You know, I think depression's through the roof because people are too busy on their phones, on their computers, and not walking out the door and talking to real people out there.
Wow. I would have said exactly what you said if I could have said it, but you said it better than I ever could. What a beautiful testimony. And you are a person so full of joy, it radiates from you. Many people listening are thinking, I can't do that. I have this or that to do. When I was early in my marriage, we were for a decade or so, our next door neighbors were Dick and Lillian Gregory. And Dick Gregory was a very famous sort of civil rights activist and a comedian. And they had hanging on the wall in their kitchen the saying, bloom where you are planted, bloom where you are planted. If everybody would just do that, you don't need to do anything more than blooming where you are right now, the whole world would change. That is so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your testimony. And now we all understand why you're so driven, because when that's going on in your mind all the time and you're full of so much joy, what else can you do but to bloom and to give everything you can? How can people get in touch with you? Is there a way to do that? Do you have a website?
Okay, it's just louiseherman.com. So I don't do any individual readings. So we've got about 20,000 requests for individual readings. So how we deal with that, people come to events and they go in a barrel and then they can get drawn out for a free reading. So we don't do any. I don't do any individual readings. I only do audience demonstrations. But look, if they want to find any further information, they can go directly to the website or Facebook as well.
So that's Louise, L-O-U-I-S-E, and Herman has two N's, H-E-R-M-A-N-N. And Louise Herman is arguably one of the very best and most important activists in this field right now. There's nobody doing things she's doing and with such cheer and with such joy. And she has a day job. So, Louise, thank you so much for being here. I'm going to ask you to come back again just to help to spread around the joy that is so, so important to all of us to get a lot more of. The more you give, the happier you are, and Louise proves that. My dear friends, I'm so glad that you're with us every week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've got suggestions about guests you'd like, some people do send in suggestions now about guests they'd like to have. Our guest next week is one person who's been requested by several people, but I love hearing from you, and I guess I can't say that often enough. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. Next week, our guest is back by popular demand. She's the extraordinary podcast host and rising star, Sandra Champlain. Sandra, I can't get over how that she did this. She set out to learn the truth firsthand. She was a skeptic. By learning to do things herself, like learning to become a medium and learning to do various other things in the area of energy, and she began to get it. So then rather than just being satisfied herself, she decided that she would teach it. She wrote a beautiful book, We Don't Die. It's so entertaining. You can just read it like candy. It's a bestseller. She does a podcast now called We Don't Die, and it has a worldwide reach. What's great about Sandra to me is that she's a generation, more than a generation younger than I am. She's a leader, a charismatic leader of the next generation in doing this work. And you're going to love her to pieces. So be sure to join us next week. This week, our guest has been a truly beautiful and powerful Australian psychic who's young. She's early 40s. Her name is Louise Herman, and she has become an excellent mental medium. And now she's developing as a physical medium in light, which anyone who knows anything about physical mediumship knows that that's not supposed to be possible. Well, she's doing it. She has devoted one evening a week for the past 10 years of her life. She started when she was obviously very young to developing as a physical medium. What's most important to me about Louise is that she has probably the most wonderful, succinct understanding of what it is to live a life of service of anyone that I have ever met. I mean, when you hear Louise talk, you understand the saints. I have to just say that. I hope she's not embarrassed for me to hear it, but the joy in her voice, and we talked a lot in the breaks, just beyond belief. Someone like Louise is a literal gift to us all and an incomparable gift. So we will have her back if she has the time. She's very busy doing what she's doing. But let me just tell you quickly again, my books are Liberating Jesus, My Thomas, Flying High in Spirit, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and The Fun of Growing Forever. Within a few months, we'll begin doing children's books because people have asked for books that teach the teachings of Jesus without religious attachment. And I think that's a wonderful idea. We're starting to do those books now. You can find recent episodes of Seek Reality on bbmglobalnetwork.com. And I've been doing this for more than 3 years. There are older Seek Reality episodes being rebroadcast on the Dream Vision 7 radio network and on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, which has affiliates worldwide at xzbn.net. If you want to go back to earlier podcasts, and some of those guests were wonderful, there are podcasts dating back as far as mid-2013 available for free on webtalkradio.net and on iTunes. For more information about any of my broadcasts, or if you'd like to know where I'm broadcasting now, read my blog or whatever, just go to robertagrimes.com. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
This has been Seek Reality with your host, Roberta Grimes. Tune in each week and discover the nature of reality and God, past, present, and future in a way that can only be told by Roberta Grimes on the next episode of Seek Reality.